Major support for Louisiana Eats on WWNO provided by Zatarain's, proud producers of authentic New Orleans-style cuisine. Zatarain's, a New Orleans tradition since 1889.
From WWNO New Orleans, this is Louisiana Eats. I'm Poppy Tooker. It's carnival time, and Mardi Gras madman Brian Batt is here to help us celebrate in style. Then, there's no better parade-watching munchie than a Hubig's pie. Drew Ramsey shares the history and tradition behind that iconic fried pie and gives us the scoop on the new Hubig's Pie King Cake. All that yumminess and more on this week's Louisiana Eats. Actor and New Orleans native Brian Batt really knows how to work a costume. On Broadway, he's appeared as a roller skating railway car in Starlight Express. He's meowed in fur in the musical Cats and dressed as a candelabra for his role as Lumiere in Beauty and the Beast. Brian, do you think Mardi Gras helped you prepare for your professional life as an actor?
I do. I never was afraid of wearing any costume that I was shown that I had to wear, because I think here it's just ingrained in our upbringing that, you know, you wear costumes here. We dressed for every Mardi Gras since I was a little kid. I can remember either we were clowns and my mother dressed as well. You know, she didn't just dress us up. She went along with us the whole nine yards. And then we were Batman and Robin for a while. My brother wanted to be Batman so badly, and I went along with it because, you know, I would be Robin. And then I continued on through my childhood, through college. I dressed up as Michael Jackson, and I remember dancing on a flatbed truck in the Garden District on the parade route and doing the Thriller dance and spitting on my back, and it was hysterical. People were taking pictures, and I think then I knew I wanted to really be an actor, but I wasn't afraid of a costume.
So in your memoir, mm-hmm. She Ain't Heavy, She's My Mother, I seem to remember a photo of you dressed as a page.
Yes, there were a couple of Mardi Gras-inspired photographs. I might have been a page or a captain of the children's ball or something. I was in the children's ball for a bunch. I was a page and a duke and then captain and then the king. And in fact, I was just going through my mom's house. I found the costume sketch of my king costume, and it was wild to see that. It was, you know, it only here do people, you know, dress their kids up in these outlandish costumes, and adults. I mean, men are walking around in tights and boots and wigs and plumes and eyeshadow, and no one questions it.
Well, you know, there's always a lot of food packed along on those days.
Yes.
Tell me some of your Mardi Gras food memories.
Well, you know, in earlier days, I was a finicky eater as a child, so it wasn't like a big thing. But as I got older, I understood the wonders of a great jambalaya or nice, wonderful clean the kitchen gumbo. But every time I think of Mardi Gras, I think of Popeye's Fried Chicken and Dixie Beer. I don't know why. And I think I only have Popeye's Fried Chicken on Mardi Gras Day every year. That's about the only time I'll have it. And it's my one guilty pleasure.
It's like stolen at Christmas and
yeah.
King cake
exactly.
On the King's Day. You know, there's some things that you reserve for special occasions.
But for about 7 years, we lived on the parade route. And you never know how many friends you have until you live on the parade route, just for the bathroom alone. But on Mardi Gras Day, Tom would make these big, big vats of gumbo and jambalaya, and all friends would bring different things. So there'd be this huge smorgasbord of food on the table, which is just what carnival should always be. My grandmother lived on St. Charles growing up as well. One of the only parades that did pass at that time was Rex. Remember, they used to all start further,
yes.
Further downtown, and she was closer to Napoleon. So I remember many Mardi Gras being at my grandmother's. Carnival is magical, and it's unique to us and unique to New Orleans, and it's fantastic. And now I was looking at the carnival guide. There's so many parades that I've never heard of because I was away for a long time. My first Mardi Gras in like 10 or 15 years was when we were here in 2003. You know, I'd been weaned away from it, you know, living in New York and doing theater. And then when you come back and you see it, it's magic all again. And it's different because when you're small, when you're a little kid, everything is huge and massive. And I remember in the children's ball when I was a little page going out into the municipal auditorium thinking, oh, my gosh, this is humongous. And then I hadn't been to one in years since, you know, I was in college and coming back and going to a ball and going, oh, my gosh, it's totally different. You know, you see the wonderful cracks and just the pageantry and how fun and whimsical it is, you know.
What's Mardi Gras like for you today?
Today, what we love to do, we don't live on the parade route anymore, but we live kind of close. We get dressed up in costume every year, no matter what it is. I usually wear a king costume that my grandfather wore in Hermes in the 50s that I found in a closet. And Tom will make some kind of crazy. I think this year he's going to be the Sun King, going full out. And we walk up and down St. Charles. We go to friends' houses and stop in at the Brennans and the Browers and some dear friends of ours. And it's just a wonderful tradition. But sometimes when I was a kid, I remember my aunt and uncle, my uncle's office was further down near Canal Street. I went with my Aunt Marilyn, who was just a hoot, and she took us in the quarter. And that was an eyeful for a sixth grader. You know, that was just like, whoa. And I've done it since when I have guests in from out of town. It's just, I find it really kind of crowded. I like an orchestra pit between me and the crowd.
Amen. me too. I miss Comus, don't you?
You know, I miss Comus a lot. I miss a night parade to really tie it up at the end. It kind of now, Carnival Day just kind of fizzles out. And there's not that surge, that goodbye at the end. And I also loving the float so much, those rickety floats and the gorgeous gold leaf and the papier-mâché as it just went down our wonderfully paved streets here in New Orleans. But that's what I think is great. You know, there's been a change in some of the, like when all the super crews have come out of necessity. And like in Orpheus, I think, you know, they're big floats, but they're beautifully artistic. But I think everything has room for improvement. There are a lot of different things that Carnival can be. I love that it's not corporate and it never, you know, that never will be. I think that's great. I think there's also a way for a lot of the crews and these balls and everything, besides having the pageantry, to also incorporate the arts, make them a little artistic or involve the symphony or involve the ballet or involve the theater community and help that in a way. I don't know how. I haven't figured it out yet. It's just a concept.
Well, Brian, we are so lucky to have our own homegrown celebrity in our midst. How come nobody's asked you to be the celebrity king yet?
I was a monarch in Orpheus a couple of years ago.
Oh!
I was. Me and my friend Joan Rivers. And it was a blast. I had a wonderful time.
Oh, yeah. My gosh. Well, tell me about that
night. It was magical. I tell you, I've ridden a few years in Orpheus. It was very, very much fun. My favorite thing about it was a dear friend of mine, Lynn Watkins, gave me a wonderful silver chalice. So I had that with me. What I love about every parade is each one, although they follow the same format, they're all different. You know, there's coup d'etat and that's political satire, you know. But I love the idea of muses, and muses is so much fun. My friend Patricia Clarkson is going to be the fabulous muse of muses. So appropriate.
Oh, I can't wait.
She's ethereal and lovely.
Thank you so much for coming to talk with us. And can I just say, happy Mardi Gras.
Happy Mardi Gras, darling.
Mardi Gras madman, Brian Fagg. Here come the folks and the marching bands. Spread a little bit of that Mardi Gras jam. They're throwing the beads and they're throwing the blooms. And everybody gets to have a good time. For our Louisiana Eats Culinary Quiz Question of the Week, brought to you with support from French Market Coffee. The correct answer to last week's question, what is the name of the technique used to get melted chocolate to the right temperature and consistency for candy making, is tempering. Properly tempered chocolate gives that lustrous gleam to the outside coating of truffles. Now let's see who this week's lucky winner is. Thomas Walsh. Our Louisiana Eats producer is manning the grinder.
Well, despite having competition from all across the country in this week's quiz, the state of Louisiana took home the prize. This week's winner hails from our capital area, Baton Rouge. Congratulations to Jane Thomas for winning the prize, and thanks to everyone who participated in this week's quiz.
Our lucky winner will be receiving 3 full-size bags of French Market coffee, including dark roast with chicory, and French roast. This week's question is, which barnyard animal does Emil DeFelice raise at his South Carolina farm, Caw Caw Creek? Email your answers to Louisiana Eats at wwno.org by midnight Sunday night. All correct answers received will be mixed together in our French Market coffee grinder, and one lucky winner will be chosen at random and announced on next week's show. Again, this week's question is, which barnyard animal does Emil DeFelice raise at his South Carolina farm, Caw Caw Creek? Email those answers by midnight Sunday night to Louisiana Eats at wwno.org with culinary quiz in the subject line, and you could be next week's lucky winner. I'm Poppy Tooker, and you're listening to Louisiana Eats. Are you a friend of Savory Simon? If you're a Hubig's pie lover like I am, you are. Since 1922, Hubig's has operated in the bywater of New Orleans. And joining us is the man who keeps Savory Simon rolling along, Drew Ramsey. Drew, welcome to Louisiana Eats.
Well, thank you for having me. Good afternoon.
So tell me, how did it all begin?
Well, there was a real man named Simon Hubig. He came from Europe at the turn of the previous century. It's widely believed that he got his start in baking, his interest in baking, because his mother worked at a bakery in Basque country, actually, literally 100 years ago. And when he came to America, he figured that he could make his fortune in the bakery business. He set up shop around government installations first. He did kind of figure out a good way to make money was to sell bread to army bases and things like that. He set up his very first one in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. He was quite an entrepreneur. He effectively had franchises all across the country before that word was even in the lexicon. He had investors, silent partners, distribution centers, co-packing operations. I mean, we have one little bakery in the Marigny that is hard enough to keep going. You know, we do production and we do distribution. I couldn't imagine riding the train to do the end of the month inventory. But if you fast forward a little bit, the Great Depression really took its toll on all of the Hubig's bakeries. We are the only one left that has the name Hubig's. They all failed for different reasons after Mr. Hubig's stopped participating in them, and the Great Depression hit, and then World War II came, and things that you need to run a bakery, dairy, eggs, milk, sugar was rationed, even down to the petroleum to put in the delivery trucks and the rubber for the tires in the delivery trucks, and they all failed except ours.
Well, thank goodness.
Well,
where would New Orleans be without Hubig's? And everything's baked fresh right there.
Absolutely.
On Dauphine Street.
Absolutely.
Right?
We keep no inventory.
Wow. So what are the local ingredients that you use?
Well, the obvious ones, for example, we don't use things out of a can. If we have a sweet potato pie, we pluck the sweet potato, the jumbo yam, out of the field in the western half of the states. We deal with the farmers who have a co-op over there. We buy kiln-dried sweet potatoes that are grown in Louisiana. And when there's a particularly awful weather event and the field is too muddy to get them out, we might not be able to make sweet potatoes that day. If there's a drought, the season might be cut short. But we don't call up Sysco and order number 10 cans full of sweet potato pie filling and just dump them into the vat. We pull them out of the ground. We get them with dirt on them. We clean them and boil them and peel them and turn them into a sweet potato pie. I mean, there's a few obvious exceptions to that rule. When we say we make everything locally fresh, there are no pineapple plantations in southern Louisiana. You know, if you want a pineapple pie, it is not a Louisiana pineapple.
Right.
But, you know, it's made fresh locally, asterisk, you know, whenever at all possible.
Well, the fact that it's not coming out of a can, which I think nowadays a lot of people would assume, you know. Give me a for instance. What's the production like on those little hand pies? How many of them a day, a month, a year?
Well, it varies by day of the week and week of the month and season. There are certain days that we just simply know we're not going to do well. We don't compete so well against free. When the Easter Bunny candy is out, our impulsory snack item perhaps suffers a little bit. When the Halloween candy is out, we don't have very good sales. But there are other times that we do very well. It's kind of funny. When there's a storm in the Gulf, people run to the hardware store and people run to the store. And I guess they view us as comfort food. And we do very well when the threat of the hurricane is upon us. But if I had to give you an average, it would be somewhere between 25,000 and 35,000 pies a day.
A day. Holy moly. So can people in other parts of the country get Hubig's pies?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we do ship boxes and boxes of love every week. We will hopefully satisfy our expatriated New Orleans friends. We didn't up until Katrina. That was one of the very few good things that came out of Katrina. The dinosaurs that run our company had not a very complicated business model. It worked. You know, we buy fresh local produce, do a value-added service, you know, cook it, sell it for a reasonable profit, and put that money back into our employees and our local economy and go on to tomorrow's production. We lost all of our base. You know, we lost the customers, we lost the stores, we lost the ability to get the product there. And I don't mean to be a cheerleader for, but I wouldn't mind giving a plug for the Idea Village. The Idea Village came to us and said, we would like to give you a grant. We would like to sponsor a grant for you to do something entrepreneurial. You have to think outside the box, and we're going to give you this money, and you have to do something new and different. We built a website. We bought some T-shirts. The very first commerce in which we engaged post-Katrina was you could buy a T-shirt. You could buy a Hubig's Pie T-shirt online. When we finally got back into business in 2006, we had a specially designed box, and you could buy pies, and we could ship them all over the place, anywhere in the continental United States.
I understand that you all will actually custom stamp the pie wrappers for weddings and other special occasions.
We do, and I used to do it for our friends. When my child was born, we had It's a Girl, and our friends were having a birthday. We could do, you know, happy birthday, Poppy. And people would say, that's a great idea, and can I do that? And we said, we don't really have the ability to do that, which was very foolish. We do now let people put a custom message on their stamp pies. They can be the bride and the groom and the date of the event. I actually had a customer whose child had been cohabitating with their boyfriend for the better part of a decade, and they were getting married, and the mother put her name and his name on the pie, and on the second line, she just stamped the word finally and passed that out to everybody. So she's the customer, so that's what we did for her.
Now, I've seen the Hubig's Pie truck riding in the front of Mardi Gras parades. How did that come about?
Well, I actually am a police officer, and I am not a full-time police officer any longer. I work with the Reserve Division nowadays, but I've been doing it for quite a while. Many, many years ago, the police association asked us if we would give some pies to the little chuck wagon vehicle that they put in front of the parade. And we said, sure. And I knew very well, I knew firsthand that there was a parade the first Friday of Mardi Gras. And I said, how many officers do you expect on whatever night? And the fellow with the police foundation said, we don't have enough money to do it Friday night. So we just took a pie van and passed them out. We just gave everybody who was working a pie, and we're happy to do it. You know, like I said, I have some firsthand knowledge of what it's like to have to stand there for the better part of 12 hours in the rain or in the cold or whatever it may be. And we're happy to say thank you.
So Drew, in the Mardi Gras season of 2011, you all branched out on some crazy Hubig's Pie king cake idea.
We
didn't
did
you?
Branch out. It was an experiment. It was not the best king cake that's out there. We tried to make it the same price point. Fresh, they tasted great. They were really quite light and fluffy and sweet, and it all worked together. It was really good. What I had not ever had to worry myself with was dealing with yeast and dough that rise. We don't do that in the pie crust. And the wrapping of it did not work so well after a few days. It started to melt in the wrapper, and the sugar started to run and move all over the place. And I would expect there's a lot of room for improvement. I'm proud to say we tried it. Every batch got better. And those that were fortunate enough to get a fresh one, I think, really enjoyed it. And I hope that we did not turn off any future customers from trying it again next year when the wrapping is improved.
So we can look for Hubig's Pie King Cakes Mardi Gras 2012?
I'm going to go out on a limb now and say that it's definitely a possibility, but we've got to improve the way that we get it to the shelf.
Drew, thank you so much for coming to talk with us.
Well, thank you for having me, Poppy. Goodbye.
Drew Ramsey of New Orleans' favorite, Hubig's Pies. Week's edition of Louisiana Eats, edible content for Louisiana food lovers. Join us on Friday, March the 23rd, for a live taping of Louisiana Eats. Our special guests are Lynn Rosetta Casper of Splendid Table and Road Foods Jane and Michael Stern. Visit wwno.org for more information. Next week, we commemorate Black History Month with civil rights activist Rudy Lombard.
The difference in the situation that we participated in was that the mayor insisted that blacks not be served in those places of public. And as a result, ultimately, the United States Supreme Court said, well, this wasn't an issue of private property.
Subscribe to our podcast, hear today's show, or catch up on previous editions anytime online at wwno.org. Louisiana Eats is made possible with major support from French Market Coffee and Zatarain's. Additional support provided by Dickie Brennan's Steakhouse, Palace Cafe, and the Bourbon House, Lights Egan Funeral Homes, the New Orleans Jazz and Heritage Foundation, and our media sponsor, Louisiana Cooking Magazine. Theme music by Johnny Sketch and the Dirty Notes, produced at Piety Street Recording. Thanks to Thomas Walsh, our associate producer and sound engineer. I'm Poppy Tooker. We'll see you next time. Louisiana Eats is a production of WWNO.